Welcome to the Secular Web Radio Show. I'm your host, T.J. Walker of tjwalker.com. Our special guest is Eddie Tabash. Ed, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me, T.J.
Many of our listeners are familiar with your work. You are the head of the National Legal Committee for the Americans United for Separation of Church and State. You're also the chair of the Center for Inquiry West, which is a part of the Council for Secular Humanism. And you're also a part of the Committee for the Scientific Investigation of Claims of the Paranormal, plus a well-known lawyer in private practice in Beverly Hills, and one of the premier debaters on religious and secular issues around the nation. Eddie, in the news, school vouchers. If you're a Republican candidate for everything from president on down to dog catcher, opposing school vouchers is basically like endorsing child molestation. What's your take on the issue?
Well, I think that a true conservative would oppose school vouchers because they're essentially a handout. Government is supposed to be neutral between believers and non-believers. And so vouchers enables government to directly fund private religious institutions. Now, I think we need to set vouchers in perspective. We have a public school system which is funded by the general taxpayers, and that could be the equivalent to the police department funded by the general taxpayers. If I don't like the police protection in my neighborhood, I can hire a private security force, but to do so, I can't expect additional subsidies from the government to help me pay for that private security force.
Nor can you deduct the equivalent amount of your local property taxes that would otherwise go to the police service.
Exactly.
Correct?
Because when government provides fundamentally basic services like police, fire protection, and the public schools, every taxpayer has to pay into that common pooled resource in order to make sure that those vital services continue. If individuals choose not to avail themselves of those services, society would break down if they could remove themselves from participating in the tax base to support those services.
But Eddie, what do you say to those who say, Eddie, I agree with everything you're saying, but look, our schools are crumbling. They're a disaster. Our kids aren't learning. We're spending more and more money. They're coming out illiterate. Look at these parochial schools. They spend one-fourth of what the public schools do, and these kids all go to college.
Well, my response would be that the solution is not to gut the funding of public schools even more by diverting precious tax dollars to vouchers. The solution would be to make sure that what limited resources we still have are not diverted, and that those limited resources remain available to the public school system, so that the fact that the public schools are crumbling means that they need more, not less support. And the voucher system would not fully pay for the tuition in expensive private schools anyway. So what we would do is we would partially fund some tuition to some private schools, but not enough so that every single child in the country could go to a posh private school, and we would wind up with an even more broken down public school system and a very wide gap between the few who could afford to totally attend private schools and the teeming mass of people who would stuck in even more dilapidated public schools, because the public schools would now be defunded to an even greater degree.
You are listening to the Secular Web Radio Show, found at infidels.org. 3ws.infidels.org. Our special guest is Eddie Tabash. He is the Los Angeles area president of Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. Eddie, now it's one thing to do battle with the Pat Robertsons, the religious right, the Christian coalitions of the world, but as we speak, there is a candidate for the Democratic nomination for president, Bill Bradley, who is leading in some states right now, and he's given a qualified endorsement of school vouchers in the past. What do you make of that?
With either Bill Bradley or Al Gore, we have to look at the mechanics of church-state separation. It doesn't matter one bit what they say in their public pronouncements. Remember, Al Gore also said that he favored the teaching of creationism at local levels if the local school district wished to do so. Bill Clinton also said that he opposed the Supreme Court decision that struck down graduation prayer, but yet it was Bill Clinton who saved that decision by putting two people on the Supreme Court in a context in which, had George Bush Sr. had been reelected and put those two people on the Supreme Court, we would have lost church-state separation. So with candidates like Bradley and Gore, we have to look to who would they put on the Supreme Court, because all of church-state separation, all of the achievement of equality of believers and non-believers before the law hinges exclusively on who sits on the Supreme Court. No legislative body, no president makes the ultimate determination. The Supreme Court does. So in choosing a president, we have to look at who that presidential candidate, if elected, would put on the Supreme Court. And it's clear that Clinton, Bradley, Gore would give us people in the mold of Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Steve Breyer, whereas any of the Republican candidates would give us people like Clarence Thomas. So I quite frankly believe that if Bill Bradley were president or Al Gore were president, that we could rely on them to put people on the Supreme Court to fill the very important vacancies that will be arising in the next presidential term, to put people on the court who would strike down any of their own proposals which are unconstitutional. So the best bet to make sure that we don't have vouchers, the best bet to make sure that we don't have creationism in the schools, is to elect a president who we can trust to put the right people on the Supreme Court. And it's the Supreme Court appointments that matter a million times more than campaign rhetoric.
Now, you just mentioned creationism. Now, if we were having this conversation at the end of the 19th century, we might be sort of chortling over creationism because it had essentially been defeated intellectually. By anyone who had beyond the 10th grade education wouldn't take creationism seriously. But here we are, approaching the year 2000, and creationism is experiencing a resurgence. In fact, the state school board of Kansas just recently passed a law or ordinance saying creationism is the way to go. What's happening here?
What's happening here is, again, we have to look to the Supreme Court, and we need to do a little bit of time travel. We have to go back 31 years to 1968. When in the case of Epperson versus Arkansas, the United States Supreme Court struck down as unconstitutional the attempt by the state of Arkansas to teach creationism, and even though the state attempted to justify it by saying it didn't have religious purpose, the Supreme Court said in that landmark case, now a 31-year-old precedent, that it would look to whether or not there is, in reality, any kind of secular legislative intent behind the law. If a legislature denies the law is based on religious doctrine, but a fair perusal of the law yields no uncertainty that the law could not be based on anything other than religious doctrine, then that law will be struck down, because we're not supposed to pass laws based on religious belief systems in a society that separates church and state. So to the extent that Epperson versus Arkansas is still the constitutional law of the land, then the actions of the Kansas School Board are entirely unconstitutional. But what is
here's my question, though. Why aren't they unpopular? If the Kansas School Board had passed a law saying, you know what, girls should stay at home, we're not going to educate girls anymore in our public schools, there would be riots in the street of Kansas. That law would be overturned so quickly, your head would spin. And yet, here they are, essentially ripping apart the Constitution in front of the voters' eyes, and nary a peep. I mean, there's not a lot of yelling and screaming and protest in Kansas right now. Why is it that the public doesn't seem to care about your issues and about the very bedrock principle of separation of church and state?
The problem we're having in this country is that the 20th century did not fulfill its promise of secular enlightenment. What happened is that at the beginning of the century...
Let me stop you right there. Can you just define for our listeners, most of them who come to the secular web know what you're talking about, but could you define secular enlightenment for those of our listeners who just may never have heard that phrase before?
Secular enlightenment means that public policy is not based on unprovable claims of the supernatural, but public policy is based on what either scientific investigation or other empirical experience shows us to be most likely in the physical universe to be true. And the 20th century began with the promise of, for the first time, elevating human beings above the clasp of religious dogma. It began on the heels of Darwin as the first century in which modern scientific learning would displace ancient fundamentalist doctrines that were now inconsistent with the best that science could have to offer. But what happened is that this thrust toward secularism, this marvelous engine of impulse toward modernization started by Robert Ingersoll in the 19th century by Darwin, and even perpetuated to a large degree by philosopher John Dewey in the first half of this century, sort of dissipated as here in the United States, our technical skills were used more for the development of astounding achievements in areas of technology and medical science than they were in making sure that our critical thinking capacities in the realm of religious faith kept the pace. So what happened is Americans began to compartmentalize. They actually began to see it as being socially improper to apply the same rule of reason to the claims of religion as they do to everything else. Religion was given an unwarranted and unjustified pass. So if the most outlandish claim were made in any other context, it would be jumped upon and subjected to the scrutiny of the rule of reason. But if an outlandish claim were made as an element of faith, as part of a religious belief system, it would be considered to be bad form to challenge it. So what happened is that over the years, and in particularly with the rise of the religious right wing, beginning with the Moral Majority's involvement in Ronald Reagan's 1980 presidential election, there has been a spiritual McCarthyism that has started to pervade this country. And now it seems that in order to be even a viable candidate for public office, you have to make a confession of faith. It's almost like witnessing to some recognizably traditional
belief system.
Well,
not only faith, you have to sort of confess to a spiritual rebirth, a second go-around, somewhere around in your 30s or 40s. It's not
exactly
quite good
and
enough
so the point is
to have done it once.
In an environment in which critical thinking is considered to be an impolite application to religious doctrine in such a climate, it no longer was socially acceptable to, on a wide range and on a wide scale, to challenge certain elemental claims of fundamentalism.
But
so
what's
we
being
find
done,
ourselves in this
Eddie? What's being done to make it socially acceptable? I mean, you're doing a lot of great work with legal challenges and Supreme Court decisions and all that. But at the basic core, down at the street level, what's happening to make it more socially acceptable to say, hey, I'm a free thinker? Can you even envision a time when a candidate could run for the presidency of the United States and be considered a viable candidate and openly say, hey, I'm a free thinker, I'm not a follower of any religion at all?
Well, I'm about to test, by offering myself as a guinea pig, whether a candidate can run for the California state legislature by saying the same thing. I don't know if it will happen with the presidency for a long time. But you see, the problem is that free thinkers have not taken the arguments to the people at large. And that's what I want to do. What I want to do is say, we are not out to destroy religious belief. But since no aspect of the human condition should be off limits for critical examination and doubt, let us, as an intellectual exercise and as a common search for truth involving all humanity, look at whether or not these things are true in society. And certainly the claims of miracles, or the claims of a God who sends you to hell forever for not believing in Jesus, or the claims of life after death, all of these should be subjected to the same level of scrutiny as any other claim which involves a violation of the laws of nature. But we see we have two...
But Andy, it's a little easier to test the water each morning for cleanliness as opposed to testing whether the Son of God came back 2,000 years ago, isn't it?
Well, not really, because you see, if our salvation is so contingent upon the Son of God coming back 2,000 years ago, then there comes a point at which it is unfair of this God not to repeat the event where us moderns can verify it. It's highly suspect if the great miracles and the great events on which turned the entire salvation of humanity occurred all at a time, at a primitive time when modern means of verification couldn't happen. I think what we need is for Jesus to come back, to be crucified again, and to lie in state.
Would be an electric chair this time.
Yes, or to lie in state.
Which wouldn't look very good in necklaces. But our special guest is Eddie Tabash. You're listening to the Secular Web Radio Show here at infidels.org. Please come here every single week for new shows with exciting luminaries in the secular movement. And we're very proud to have with us in this inaugural show, Eddie Tabash. Now, Eddie, you know, an awful lot of Americans out there who might even be sympathetic to your viewpoint, but they've heard for so long, whether it's from politicians, whether it's from Pat Robertson, that, gosh darn it, you know, this nation was founded by Christians. This is a Christian nation. There was always God and prayer in schools till, you know, those bad old liberals and Madeline Murray O'Hare kicked out God from schools, and then things got worse. You take issue with this reading of history, don't you?
I take issue with it because the actual Constitution itself, even prior to the Bill of Rights a few years later, was an officially secular document, and the only reference to religion was a negative one. In the original Constitution drafted in 1787, it said there shall be no religious test for public office in the United States. And before the Constitution was ratified, it was debated throughout the original 13 colonies. And a man who was soon to sit on the Supreme Court, Justice Iredell, said openly that this will be the first time in history that we allow non-believers and infidels to hold public office, and this is fine. That in order to overcome prejudice, we no longer measure a person's fitness for public office by whatever religious beliefs they embrace or that they don't hold. And then James Madison, who was the initial architect of the First Amendment, a few years before drafting it, introduced into the Virginia legislature Thomas Jefferson's Bill on Religious Freedom, where it was said that our civil rights should no more depend on our opinions on religion than they should depend on our opinions on physics and geometry. So the principal drafter of the First Amendment was most influenced by Thomas Jefferson, who himself said, "It does me no injury for my neighbor to say there is no God or 20 gods. It neither picks my pocket nor breaks my leg." With all of this, plus in the Treaty of Tripoli in 1797, George Washington saying the United States was not founded on the Christian religion or any other religion, and then, of course, with Benjamin Franklin being some kind of Rosicrucian or some other kind of Western mystical whatever he was, calling himself a deist very early on in life, essentially what a lot of the framers thought of, if they thought of a God at all, was some being who in the remote antiquity of the universe jump-started everything and then took an eternal coffee break. But certainly it was not a Christian founding. It was the founding of a society in which believers could flourish, but non-believers as well. So the true reading of American history is the establishment of a nation in which believers and non-believers are equal before the law, and in which your official standing in the society is not measured by accepting or rejecting any tenet of religious belief.
Eddie Tabash with Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. Thank you for being our guest today on the Secular Web Radio Show. I'm TJ Walker with TJWalker.com. Please go every single day for news updates, all the top stories about what's going on in the world at TJWalker.com, plus fresh, original commentary and perspective on breaking political news stories. We have fresh columns for you, fresh radio commentaries, and video TV commentaries every single day. So please go to www.tjwalker.com. That's it. I'm TJ Walker. See you next week on the Secular Web Radio Show.